All right, disciple makers, we've looked at the motive for making disciples, loving others, and how Jesus used normal conversations to find and address the needs of the people he was talking to.
Okay, but at some point in our conversation, we're going to have to make the change. We're going to have to steer the person to the fact that their biggest need is a savior. And trying to make that transition from helping the person with their specific life needs to talking about their greatest need of all, salvation.
We find out how to do that next on Inner Man Radio. Welcome to Inner Man Radio, where we accomplish more than we thought we could through Christ's power working in us, regardless of what your pastor said last week.
Hey guys, so let's drop the excuses, grab our Bibles, and prepare to win.
For those jumping into the middle of this series on making disciples, Mark, we've discussed some key ingredients that a person needs if they want to reach the people around them. First thing we talked about was love for the other person.
I think that's a good place to start.
It might be.
Yeah, maybe.
So we talked about the motive. You know, do we love the people around us? And then we talked about finding out what that person's needs are and really using Jesus's example and how he talked to people in normal conversation to really pinpoint what their needs are and find out how he could help them.
Yeah, people will tell you what they need. People will tell you where they're struggling if we'll be quiet and listen to them.
And so in that process, we take wherever, whatever their needs are, and if they give us permission to help them with that, we're going to go through and use the scriptures to help them address the real issue, which is almost always, well, it is always a personal character issue. Because no matter what the person's problems are, our problems, their problems, we can't control other people, but we can control us.
Yeah, we can control us. And really, that's where people, that's the only place they can legitimately work. If somebody comes to you and says, I have a problem with my wife, the only person you get to work on is the person in front of you.
Right.
You don't get to work on their kids or their coworkers. They got to work with them. So that's where we're going to start.
And we use the scriptures to walk them through some transformation of character. And if you haven't listened to episodes 1-5 of Inner Man Radio, it talks about that process of changing the inner man, overcoming sin. So we're going to use some of those principles in the scriptures. And in the process of walking this person through changing character traits, they're going to start seeing some success. And the goal is to build faith that the scriptures do have the answers.
Yeah, the Bible does have those answers. And when people start to see that, you know what, I can change my character. I can use Christian principles, even though they may not be Christians yet. The Bible still works. And if somebody is understanding, hey, I got to make this choice differently, or I have to make change these priorities around, that does start to change their life. And when they see, hey, this is working, there's something positive going on here, then they have a reason to investigate a little further. They've got a reason to ask, what else do you have for me?
Right. And so what we're doing is we're building faith in the scriptures. Now, this brings us to an important point. Maybe I always use the word crucial. It gets overused on internet.
Crucial.
This is crucial. But it is. And that is to define what faith is. Now, before everybody tunes out and says, oh, man, this is going to be a lexicon.
Warning, definition time.
Yeah.
Beep, beep, beep.
Most of the world, when they hear the word faith, that or the... Or they think of blindly stumbling along, blind faith. In other words, faith is that which you have if you don't have evidence.
Yes, yes. And it's a leap of faith.
A leap of faith. So I believe in God. You just got to have faith.
I saw the movie.
You did? Did you really?
Leap of faith?
I never saw that.
Oh, hilarious.
Anyway. All right, so it seems like a dichotomy. It's opposites. Either you have faith or you have facts, but you can't have both.
Yeah.
And we want to help people overcome that because that's not really the definition of faith, is it?
No, it isn't. No, that's just wishful thinking is all that is. If I want something to be true and if I want it bad enough and if I call that desire faith, then God is somehow obligated to give me that thing. You're setting yourself up for a lot of disappointment.
Yes, but for a lot of people, faith is a feeling.
Yeah.
I feel that it's right. I feel... But Mark, it's more than a feeling. Dun, 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 dun. Yeah. Okay, it's more than a feeling.
It is.
And that comes back to the nature of God himself.
If faith is just a feeling, when your feelings go away, what happened to your faith?
Gone.
If I'm feeling that yeah, God is going to do this for me if I'm feeling this, or I'm feeling that God is really in my life, but I don't have facts to back that up when I'm not feeling God close to me anymore. That just brings the house down.
It does. It becomes a crisis of faith.
That's right. Yeah. That's right.
For a lot of people coming out of the world, all they know about the scriptures and having faith is that you basically have to turn your brain off to have faith.
No thinking person.
No thinking
could
person.
Could believe in religion.
In fact, we'll play a little clip right here of Richard Dawkins, someone who's revered in the world as being a super smart guy. Here's what he has to say about Christians and faith.
Yeah, check this out.
I think we should look at the history of religion and be fascinated by it, just as we look at the history of art and so on. But I don't think that religion has anything useful to teach us. One of the main reasons why people are religious is because they're persuaded by the apparent design of living things. And that's completely destroyed by Darwin. If you actually read any book by a biologist about evolution, it's hard to see how you could fail to be persuaded of it. The evidence is just absolutely pat. There's no doubt about it. It's not a controversial issue. It's completely certain. It's as certain as the fact that the Earth and the other planets orbit the sun. More than 40% of the American population, if opinion polls are to be believed, think that the world is less than 10,000 years old. And that's a shocking figure. It shows deep, profound ignorance. It sounds very laudable to teach the controversy, to teach both theories, but there aren't two theories. There's only one theory around. There's only one game in town as far as serious science is concerned. Of course, you get negative reactions from creationists, but who cares about creationists? They don't know anything.
In Richard Dawkins' words, it's already been decided, Mark.
It's a done deal. The game is over. All of the evidence has been weighed, and any of those fundamentalist Christians who believe the world is less than 10,000 years old, they just don't know anything.
It's such ignorance.
Deep, profound ignorance.
Oh, it's a shame,
yeah.
Really.
Yeah, but evolution is as much fact as the planets orbiting the sun.
It's completely certain. It's as certain as the fact that the Earth and the other planets orbit the sun.
Can't be denied.
Nope. And even who cares about what Christians think? Because
who cares about creationists? They don't know anything.
Right. So how do we talk to a person who's been inundated with this stuff, probably through the school system since they were a kid?
Yep.
And maybe they went to college and it was even pounded in. How do we talk to that person and help them build faith that's based on fact, not feeling?
Yeah. You know, I really... When we talk about building faith, faith has to be honest. I'd agree with Dawkins that for a lot of people who haven't thought through those questions and have just simply adopted somebody else's ideas, but without any personal investigation,
that's shaky.
That's
ground.
hard to argue with. Now, that's not to say that people don't do the very same thing with evolution, which they certainly do. But the point is, for us, our faith has to be a personally developed, a rational, honest investigation that determines our convictions. And if we can do that, if we can encourage people to have that conversation, make that investigation, and then draw some of their own conclusions based on that evidence, now they have a faith that's not someone else's. They didn't borrow it. They didn't read it on a postage stamp or a greeting card.
Or bumper sticker. Yeah, those are always the best.
There's a lot of good doctrine that comes off bumper sticker.
We ain't from no monkeys. You know, that's always a good one. Yeah,
that's very helpful.
Thank you.
But those things, we have to help people look at the evidence and sort it out for themselves. And the scriptures give us that evidence, but we don't be able to begin there. Wait,
Mark. I sense an outline coming up here. Bullet points, outline. Mark, you got to see him. He's grinning.
Yes.
He's grinning from ear to ear.
Point number one on the topic of the historical Jesus. will come from Cornelius Tacitus, preeminent historian of Rome. Nero falsely charged with the guilt and punished with the most exquisite tortures.
Wait.
The persons commonly... I'm still going.
I thought you were actually...
Called Christians, who were hated for their enormities. Christus, that would be Christ, the founder of the name, was put to death by Pontius Pilate, procurator of Judea, in the reign of Tiberius. But the pernicious superstition, repressed for a time, broke out again, not only through Judea, where the mischief originated, but through the city of Rome also. Cornelius Tacitus, preeminent historian of Rome, talks about how Jesus was understood by them in that time to be the founder of that movement, and how Pontius Pilate had been the procurator of Judea, and he was put to death by him at that time.
Okay, back up.
Not a biblical source.
Okay, all right. So that was actually great information.
Thank you.
That I totally destroyed really by good, snoring over you. Now I feel kind of bad. Not much, just a little. So let's give that a proper intro. What did you just read to us, and why is that important?
Tacitus really is probably the chief historian of the Roman era. And what he did is he went back and he wrote the histories of Rome. In this particular excerpt that I read is Nero, falsely charged with guilt and punished Christians, hated just for their regularities. He talks about how Christ was the beginner or the founder of that movement, and how he was put to death by Pontius Pilate, the procurator of Judea in the reign of Tiberius. So this is a secular scholar. Tacitus is not a Christian, but he outlines for us when Jesus lived, that Jesus was a real person. He references Pilate. He talks about how he was put to death and the existence of a large number of Christians who believed those facts.
Okay, so where we've started here is we've started at the baseline to say Jesus is a historical figure.
He's a real guy.
That's provable. And for a lot of people listening to this, they're thinking, well, duh. But that isn't a given for
That's
many
not
people.
A given.
Because I know there were some theories that were big back in the 70s and 80s about Jesus being the Jesus myth.
Yeah.
That's kind of actually been recirculated now under different terms. But for a lot of people, Jesus isn't historical. But you just read a historical account from a person who was not a Christian,
yep,
a historian in the Roman Empire, who makes specific reference to Jesus.
Yeah, he does. Sometimes, one of those modern-day appearances of that same kind of disbelief is called, the Christ theology,
right,
where the Christ is in you, that Jesus wasn't a real person. He didn't inhabit flesh and bone the way that we do, but he's a teaching. The Christ teaching is a Christ theology, and that they adopted that, and that's total bogus. But the idea is, again, to try and remove any person from believing that there was an historical Jesus. Here's another one. This is Julius Africanus on another historian named Thallus. He says, Thallus, in the third book of his histories, explains away this darkness. He's talking about the eclipse at Jesus' crucifixion. As an eclipse of the sun, unreasonably as it seems to me, unreasonably, of course, because a solar eclipse could not take place at the time of the full moon, and it was at the season of the paschal full moon that Christ died. This is Thallus, again, recounting the history. He references Jesus as an historical person.
Okay.
He references Jesus' death as an historical fact. And he says that the darkness that happened in connection with Jesus' crucifixion was an actual event, that actually happened. Thallus wrote it down. Africanus just simply comments on Thallus' work.
So when we're reading the gospel and it talks about how the earth was darkened, people who are skeptical of that say, oh, come on, that's just proof that this is a complete bogus story, because
right,
that couldn't have happened. But we've got a historian that is not a Christian,
yep,
talking about that very thing.
Talking about that it did happen. And in fact, when he brings out the point that it could not be a solar eclipse, because the Jewish calendar is a lunar calendar. And so their festivals, in particular, this one would be Passover, when Jesus is crucified. That Passover festival is going to come in a full moon. You can't have a full moon and an eclipse at the same time. So the fact that he mentions that makes it clear that he's not trying to make excuses. He's saying that this can't be explained away by a solar eclipse. But this darkness did absolutely take place at that time. Thallus believed it had been an eclipse. It's It's Africanus who comments on that and says, no, that's not possible, but the darkness was real. Robert Stein, a New Testament professor, this guy is a Christian, says this. He says, the non-Christian sources establish beyond reasonable doubt the following minimum. One, Jesus was truly a historical person. Two, Jesus lived in Palestine in the first century of our era. Three, the Jewish leadership was involved in the death of Jesus. Four, Jesus was crucified by the Romans under the governorship of Pontius Pilate. And five, Jesus' ministry was associated with wonder and sorcery. Those are the things that we learn from secular sources, not from biblical sources. Now, the fact that the two match up should start to help us understand or grow some faith in the fact that the Bible has accurately recorded the things that we're seeing in secular history.
So as a person is building faith in the Word, they're building faith in a Word that has evidence behind it.
Right. Yep. Romans 10:17 outlines how faith comes. He says, faith comes from hearing, and hearing by the Word of Christ. Faith doesn't come by, you know, asking the faith fairy to, you know, you slip it under your pillow and the faith fairy comes at night and grants your wish. And then you have faith. I know. Does not come by sitting in the pew long enough.
No?
No.
Oh, okay.
No.
All right.
Popular misconception that faith is not similar to a muscle cramp. You know, if you sit in church long enough, you did not develop faith because you're just hearing someone else's convictions.
Yes.
Faith comes from hearing, and hearing by the Word of Christ. When somebody is investigating the claims of the gospel, the Word of Christ, that's how faith is really established. That's how faith is strengthened, is by asking those questions.
Even in the presentation of the Gospels, Luke, when he's writing his Gospel, he talked about the things that he investigated and found them to be true.
Yes.
And that's how he was convicted about it and able to share it.
That's right. Yep, absolutely right. And people are going to want to know, why should I believe what you believe? There are some great resources out there. One of the biggest obstacles that we have in our present world is the fact that evolution has kind of been adopted, not kind of,
it has been
adopted really as the state religion. It's taught in state school. It's sponsored on state television.
Mm-hmm.
It's everywhere. Evolution is inescapable, and you know, the quote that we heard from Dawkins earlier outlines that eloquently. But the issue is not over. It hasn't been decided. Dawkins would like to see an end of controversy, but the fact of the matter is there are thinking people who arrive at different conclusions. One of the greatest resources that I've run across in my personal life is a wonderful book by a friend of mine named Rob O'Keefe. Rob O'Keefe lives in Ohio and is an electrical engineer by trade, but Rob is an excellent writer and has an excellent scientific mind. He wrote a book called Gaining the High Ground Over Evolutionism. Rob's book is well thought out. It's honest. It doesn't give a pass to difficult questions for creationism. But it really outlines the faulty logic that evolutionism can't use in order to stand. It does a great job of saying, you know what? And Christians for too long have silently agreed with Dawkins and said, you know what? We really don't have reasons for what we believe.
Right.
We're just going to believe it anyway. And science has all the real answers. And we're just not going to go there. And
but
that's
my heart chooses God, even though my brain says that maybe it's not real.
Ugh.
Yeah, no, but that's a popular sentiment in Christianity today,
yep.
So-called Christianity. We're going to go ahead and link Rob's book onto our Facebook page as well.
Yeah, you've got it's accessible to, you know, you don't need to have a degree in order to understand it, but it doesn't dumb the issues down either. It's really an excellent resource for all questions regarding creation evolution. So it's worth picking up.
So back to building faith. So we're in the process of helping a person build the faith in the Scriptures, because faith really is, as anybody listening to this knows, it's the foundation of Christianity.
Yes.
But we're talking about the right kind of faith, not a faith based on a feeling, not a faith based on a conversion experience when the emotions were running high and everybody was swaying to the music or the lights or whatever.
Right.
No, and seriously, I mean, that for a lot of people is what they think of when they think of faith. It's this emotional experience. We're talking about faith that's rock solid, based on evidence. So when we're helping people do that, Mark, not everybody's going to go along with it. Are they?
Well, I'm sure that if we just gave them a reasonable, I think in outline form presentation, I think everyone
that's been the problem.
Would see the logic behind the facts, and they would...
And you could point out, like, this fallacy is a red herring, Bob.
Yes.
And
this is a straw man argument.
Yes. We're going down the slippery slope.
That's right.
And they would have to agree.
They would.
Yes.
But they don't. Because so many times, number one, people haven't usually been taught to be logical in their thought process. But secondly, they've got some other things that are pulling them back the other way. People absolutely do make the mental calculation that if I believe this, I'm going to have to make some changes.
Yes.
I mean, I sat down with a guy, and we were talking about evidence and can we really establish what is real? And so, you know, I asked him, well, this pencil in my hand, is this real? Can you know that for sure? Well, he wasn't too sure about the pencil because if he says, yes, I'm sure that that pencil exists, then by the same reasoning, we can say, yes, I'm sure that Jesus exists.
Right.
And his mind made the calculation that if I go here, that's checkmate, and I'm not going to go there. So he says, I don't know.
Yeah.
I'm not sure about whether the pencil exists. Guys, you're going to run across that all the time. For different reasons, people may or may not say, yes, I'm interested in this, or that makes sense to me, or yes, I can believe that. Some people know that if they go down that trail, they're going to be forced to make sacrifices or life character changes that they don't want to make. Okay. Now, we need to ask a question, though, here. What makes it a success when you share your faith? When you're out there and you want to talk to somebody, what would make that a success?
Immersed for the forgiveness of sins.
Yes. Okay. Slam dunk, right?
Done. Slam dunk. Okay.
Right. Paul disagrees.
Really?
I know.
Okay.
I know, it's a shock.
All right.
In 1 Corinthians and chapter 1, Paul says something that is really quite strange. He says in verse 17, he says, Christ did not send me to baptize, but to preach the gospel, not in cleverness of speech, that the cross of Christ should not be made void. Paul said that he was not sent to baptize. Well, I thought that Paul baptized all kinds of people. He baptized several in Corinth.
Yes.
He baptized people in Philippi.
Right.
He baptized people all over the place. But he said that's not his primary goal.
What's his goal?
Well, think about...
I fell right into that trap, but that's... Okay.
Think about the Great Commission, okay. Right? Which we often quote out of Matthew chapter 28.
Yes.
Go into all the world, make disciples, right? Immerse those disciples, continue to teach those disciples. I'm with you always to the end of the age. All right. Fantastic. What's the primary directive in the Great Commission?
Go.
And the second is teach. You make disciples. It's not my responsibility to baptize. Now, if somebody says, that if they become a disciple and they say, I want to be baptized, I will absolutely do that for them. But I can't make that choice. I'm not responsible for whether someone decides, hey, I want to become a Christian.
Right.
What I am responsible for is the go and the make disciples part. I'm responsible for getting the message out. And so Paul said that he was responsible to preach the gospel, not in cleverness of speech.
Right.
We're not trying to pull the wool over anybody's eyes that the cross of Christ should not be made void.
Right.
But baptism is their job. It's not my job.
Okay.
Make sense?
So becoming a Christian, that's not on your shoulders. And so when you're talking to people, when we're talking to people and we don't have success.
Right.
Now,
as we perceive it,
that they are the people we're talking to don't become Christians. Now, there might be some things that we can do differently.
Maybe.
There might be some things in our character that we need to work on to be
Perhaps.
Better examples. But in principle, what you're saying is success isn't necessarily measured by how many people we can say, you know what, I led them to Christ, because
nope.
That's not really the directive.
That's not our responsibility. Our responsibility is to go to make disciples. There's lots of good examples of that. You know, when Philip, for instance, is teaching the Ethiopian, right, in Acts chapter 8.
Right.
And so it says, beginning from this scripture, that is Isaiah 53, he preached Jesus to him. So Philip is talking to the Ethiopian about Jesus. when they come to some water, it's the Ethiopian who says, hey, look, water. What prevents me from being baptized? Philip says, hey, if you believe with all your heart, you may. And they go down and they get her done. Okay, I would say that's definitely a successful instance of sharing faith. But notice that who was responsible for the desire to be baptized? Philip certainly included that in his teaching about Jesus, or the Ethiopian would not have known to ask. But it was the Ethiopian's, it was his desire to say, I'm ready to go through with this.
So even if the eunuch had not expressed that desire, Philip had success because he taught him Jesus.
Absolutely. Yeah, he did his job. He did his job. Sometimes we set the bar so high for ourselves that not even Jesus would be a success in sharing his faith. Well, Jesus struck out a lot.
And now the right-hander is to the plate with the 0-2 to A-Rod. Swing! And a foul tip into the glove of Dan Wilson, who hangs on to it!
In Matthew chapter 11, here's a great example of that. Jesus is kind of chastising several of the several cities. In Matthew 11, verse 20, he began to reproach the cities in which most of his miracles were done because they did not repent. Woe to you, Chorazin! Woe to you, Bethsaida! If the miracles had occurred in Tyre and Sidon, which occurred in you, they would have repented long ago in sackcloth and ashes. Nevertheless, I say to you, it will be more tolerable for Tyre and Sidon in the day of judgment than you. And you, Capernaum! That's Jesus' hometown. It's where he lives. Will not be exalted to heaven, will you? You will descend to Hades. If the miracles had occurred in Sodom, which occurred in you, it would have remained to this day. Whoo, talk about a scathing rebuke.
Yeah.
Jesus said, here's all these towns where most of his miracles were done. And by and large, they had said thanks, but no thanks.
We're good. We're good. Thank you. Yep. That was cool. Nice. Nice work. Yeah.
Tyre, Sidon, Sodom, more righteous than Chorazin, Bethsaida, and Capernaum. Even in light of the fact that something greater than the prophets who went to those towns was there. They saw Jesus' miracles. Still didn't persuade them. If we say that the only way sharing my faith is a success is if the person decides that they're going to become a Christian, not even Jesus reaches that bar. Most of the time, when Jesus talked to people, they were interested in one thing or another, but not as many were interested in becoming followers of Christ. Some were, not everybody.
We can't take it personally then, Mark. If someone says no, is there a time for some reflection? Yeah, we need to. But really, we can't take that personally. Just like anybody who's in sales knows, the more people you talk to, the better you get at it, and the more people will be interested. But there's going to be people who just say no thanks.
They're going to say no thanks.
It
is okay.
Yeah.
Jesus said, if the world hates you, you know it hated me before it hated you. If you were of the world would love its own. But because you're not of the world, I chose you out of the world. Therefore, the world hates you. Remember, he said, the word that I said to you, a slave is not greater than his master. If they persecuted me, they'll persecute you also. If they kept my word, they will keep yours also. Jesus said, you're going to have to expect that.
Nobody likes me, everybody hates me, I think I'll go eat worms. Great big juicy ones, teeny weeny squeeny ones, see how they wiggle and squirm. Cut off their heads.
So when we're doing this, yes, we absolutely love the person that we're trying to help, but we also cannot be so emotionally invested that it crushes us if they say no. There has to be a little bit of, I don't know how to describe it better than maybe some professional distance. I mean, we care about people, we invest our lives in them, but if they say no, we still have to go on to the next person. If they say no thanks, we still want to leave that door open because we care about that person, but it doesn't mean that you've failed, that you're a failure, or that Jesus doesn't love you.
I raised my eyebrows when you said the words
professional distance. How do you like
that? Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, that sounds like code word for being cold and hard. But it's not, because a good way to describe that would be Jesus when he went through those villages and performed those miracles. And the people said, thanks, Jesus, but no thanks. It didn't crush him.
Uh-uh.
He was hurt for their sake because he cared about them.
Yes.
But he didn't take it personally to the point to where he no longer was going to do his job. He still had a ministry to do
right.
as a, quote, professional. I guess we're using that word.
Okay.
But that's a good word for it. You know, he stayed on course doing what he was supposed to do regardless of what those people's reaction was.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, you can think of it this way. You know, you can think of it like a paramedic or an EMT. Okay? They give because they really do care about the people that they're trying to help, that they're trying to save. You know
right.
what? A doctor is trying to help that person, okay? But there has to be a little bit of if that fails, if that goes wrong, if something happens and for some reason, you know, they don't survive, that paramedic who arrived on the scene cannot take that personally. Got to be able to be ready so that when the next guy, when the siren goes off tomorrow,
he's ready.
He's got to be on.
Yep.
And we got to do the same thing. We love the people around us, and we want to help those people. If they aren't ready for that help yet, that's okay. Be ready for the next guy who is.
And still keep that door open for the person
absolutely.
Who
isn't. Absolutely.
Absolutely. Okay. So, Mark, yep. for those who are interested
yeah.
and those who are building faith, and they're open to building more faith in Christ and learning more about Him, what's next?
We really need to start to help them understand who Jesus is. So we talked about some secular sources of history that confirm that Jesus is a real guy. He really did live. Those things really happened. But we want to talk about building faith in the claims that Jesus made that are unbelievable.
Unbelievable.
How'd you like that?
That's pretty good.
That was good, wasn't it?
And we'll talk about that next time
on Inner Man Radio.
But before that, if you feel like you've been blessed by Inner Man Radio, and the Lord has laid it on your heart to partner with us in this ministry, would you please prayerfully consider a commitment to
liking us on Facebook and sharing us with
your friends. Until then, we pray that you will be strengthened with power through His Spirit in the inner man.